Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Today's episode is part of a series called The Exit Interviews. The exit interviews are a look back from somebody who's already been through a divorce to share their experiences in order to help people going through their divorce now. We have a very special guest with us today. Her name is Jerry McFadden. Welcome, Jerry.
Thank you.
Jerry is actually my sister. And Jerry, I don't know if you know this, you probably do because you've listened to a lot of these episodes. Mm-hmm. I actually reference your divorce in some episodes, certainly on co-parenting. And so I found that a very interesting co-parenting approach you and your ex-husband took, but we'll get to that in a minute. A couple things I want to do. We'll just lay the groundwork for our listeners with your particular divorce. So the first thing is, when did you get divorced? And here's what I mean. When did you file? And then when was it over?
We filed in 1997. And it was over in 99. That's when, in May of 99, is when the divorce became final, because that's when I had to sell the house.
Ah, okay. So only 2 years. That's not bad, actually, because you also had three children, and that's a lot to sort out. Jerry, what were their ages when you started the divorce?
When I started, they were 7, 9, and 11.
Okay. So that's pretty young, and there's a lot of years to go through co-parenting at that age. So that's important. Now, other questions. Was this an amicable or contentious divorce?
This was contentious.
So explain what made it contentious.
One, I am the one who initiated the divorce. So my ex was certainly not happy about my doing this. And very angry. He became very angry. And that lasted for years and years. Even after the divorce was finalized, he was angry for many, many years. And of course, that affected everything. That anger affected everything. The way we co-parented or didn't, the way we communicated, it was very destructive to our children.
Do you think that he remained angry because you initiated it and there was a loss of control and that was important to him, or that he simply wanted to remain married? He didn't agree that the divorce was the right thing. What do you think?
Both. All of it. He was angry that I was the one that initiated it. He did not want a divorce. I guess he wanted to live the way we were living. Yes, it was a lot. He was narcissistic. And so, as you know, narcissistic personalities have a hard time when someone else does something that affects them negatively. So he was very, very angry about it.
You know, that's funny that you bring up narcissistic, because obviously he's my ex-brother-in-law. And I never thought about narcissism back then, and really not even now till you mentioned it. But in a lot of my episodes over the past year or so, narcissism is one of the biggest topics now that people talk about. It's kind of the personality disorder du jour.
Correct. And I, at that time, I had no idea that was what was going on. It was after years when I was working at a company, a staffing agency, and the receptionist was talking about her divorce. And I said, gosh, your ex sounds so much like mine. And she says, it's narcissistic personality disorder. Go look it up. And I did. And oh my God, like the light bulb went off. There it was. There he was. And so in looking at that, and of course, I realized then that this is a disorder that cannot be treated, really. It's very difficult to get somebody through this. And so there we have it.
So I was interviewing a gentleman in January. I posted his episode. His name is Bill Eddy. And I talk about Bill Eddy constantly on these episodes. He is an author of 24 books. He's a mediator, a licensed social worker, and a family law attorney. And he really talks about personality disorders and how you get through legal disputes with them. And he even says, like you said, you can't really change people. They can soften throughout time, which is kind of what I've seen when we have weddings and family events and John is there. He seems to have softened a lot. Do you agree?
Yes. He has softened somewhat in the last, I would say, the last 10 years. But for the first 10 years, he was pretty rough. Pretty rough on me, pretty rough. There was basically no co-parenting. He was not willing to participate in parenting the children with me. He just dealt with them on his own terms. And I dealt with them on my own terms.
All right. Well, I'm going to jump to a question I was going to ask you later, but since you mentioned co-parenting, I'll go to it now. See, I may remember this differently, but I knew things weren't good. I knew you were going through a rough time during the filing and there were, hearings, but I thought that you allowed the children to decide where they wanted to go. And I thought that was brilliant. Do I remember that really incorrectly?
You may. So what happened, first of all, I was never going to give the children to him as sole custody or as primary custodian because he was not a fit parent. He just wasn't. He was verbally abusive to Mia and my daughter, and he was also very neglectful emotionally to the two boys. So the smartest thing I did was get an attorney, and she advised me, and I took her advice, like it or not, and I didn't like some of the advice she gave me, but I took every piece of advice that she offered, and it benefited us both. So I was primary custodian. He was offered traditional custody, which was every other weekend and one day during the week, which he never took. He did the every other weekend, but that was it. I would never have permitted him to have them full time.
Not full time. But I just thought I remembered the kids saying, yeah, there's no real set times. And you two lived like 5 minutes apart from one another, which I thought was also beautiful. By the way, Jerry lives in Pennsylvania. I'm in California. As I've mentioned on many of the episodes, there are differences in divorce laws. But in general, when you're talking about custody, it's either sole custody or joint custody, and somebody gets primary, meaning their address is the primary address. But I thought the kids, maybe at some point when they were older, got to say where they wanted to go and when, and neither of you argued with them. You seemed to give them full reign over their schedule.
Well, yeah, because they would never have lived with their dad. Except when they, when they did get older, Mia, but she was much older. She was emancipated and she could live wherever she wanted. She ended up staying with her father for different reasons. And she ended up coming back. He wasn't a fit parent no matter what. No matter how old they were.
So there really was kind of a structured day-by-day plan.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
There was no other way for us to live. It had to be structured.
Okay. All right then. Spousal and child support. Well, we say spousal support in California. I think you say alimony in Pennsylvania. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. So was child support and spousal support part of the settlement?
Yes. Absolutely.
Now, what were your challenges and difficulties in getting to that point, if there were?
So when spousal support here was, I think, 2 years. I'm not positive. It could have been three, but I think it was 2 years of spousal support to give me time to get back on my feet and back in the workforce, which I did. Then we had child support. And that both of these were built into the settlement. The child support, of course, lasts until the kids turn 18, except for John, because my middle child is special needs. I had it built into the settlement that he would get child support for life. And so until my ex-husband dies, John gets child support.
And we call that in California adult child support for special right. needs. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And was that difficult to get?
Oh, no, no. He would have looked bad.
Well, and there were also, you probably also had to supply some type of paperwork, some type of tests that showed that.
Yes, and I have all of that. To this day, I have all of his paperwork that shows, you know, all his evaluations from doctors and hospitals, et cetera. So, yeah, there was no denying. And plus, John is also, he is hooked up with our county mental health, mental retardation services, MHMR. And so there's no denying any of that. And you know what? And here, I'll tell you something. This is about the narcissism that exists with some of these people, that they don't want to look bad. And so for him to say, no, I will not support my son anymore, makes him look like a bad person. And he could not ever accept that.
That's a very interesting point that you brought up. And that is true. So if you know that, and there's a valid reason that you're asking for something like a special needs child. Mm-hmm. For those of you listening, you can, that's one of your strengths that you can use, that a narcissist doesn't want to look bad. Mm-hmm. And I want to just say this, because this is a podcast about amicable divorces, and I want to put this out there. Nobody who has personality disorders wants to have them. And I, because I've done this work now for quite a while in divorce, I try and talk to incoming clients and say, if you know that your spouse has a personality disorder, you can't really stay mad at them. You have to deal with it, because they don't really know. They think that the way they are is normal. And you just have to have a little bit of forgiveness, yet you have to deal with whatever their disorder is in a very creative way. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I totally agree. That is an excellent point, that they don't know that they have a disorder. They don't recognize it. And so even though, you know, you need to recognize it and identify what's going on, but you also need to stand firm, especially if you have children, to do what is in the best interest of the children.
And that was well said too. Very well said. Okay, Jerry, how did you prepare for the divorce?
So one of your questions to me is, what am I most proud of in terms of how I handled myself in the divorce? And that would be the prep work. So when I realized that things were never going to get better, that I was going to have to start to look at an alternative lifestyle, I went to a class and took a class in how to get divorced and what steps a person needs to take if they are considering getting a divorce. There's the simple things like setting up a checking account in your own name, setting up a credit card in your own name. These types of things which you need to do to protect yourself, in the event that you do actually decide to follow through. And I did all of that. And I still have the materials in a briefcase under my bed. The next thing I did was to take a class for displaced housewives. And this was another really beneficial class that I took. And it kind of went, it was a wonderful class led by a psychologist. And they did all kinds of in-depth looking at your strengths, where you could possibly find employment. They helped me, oh my gosh, they helped me get back on my feet. They really did. That not only that, but when it came to that time, that critical time when I had to make that hard decision to go forward, I was able to call them and get advice, counsel, and emotional support to do the hardest thing I've ever had to do, which was to initiate this divorce.
It is really hard, isn't it?
Oh my God. Or the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
What was your thought process?
Well, he kind of made it easy for me. So I remember talking to the psychologist in that class. And one of the things I had asked her was, because I really didn't want to hurt the kids. I really did not want to do anything that was going to damage my children. And I said to her, do you think a person can survive in a relationship where they are unhappy for the sake of the children? And she looked at me and she said, not you. Maybe some people could do it, but not you. Because she knew me pretty well by then. Then my therapist, because I also went to therapy during this time, during my decision-making period, I was in therapy. And the therapist said to me, and I think this was an important question because it really did matter. She said, what would it take for you to decide to end this relationship? And I said to her, he would have to physically hurt me. And he did. One night he did it. And so that prior conversation with the psychologist, with my class leader, and the other conversation with the therapist, when it happened, that was like, okay, so it happened. And then I called you because I was in complete denial of what he had done. And you were the one that said to me, I know you don't want to hear this. This is going to be really hard, but you need to call the police and file a report. And I did it. I just did it. And so one of the things that I advise people all the time is listen to the people who support you. Even if everything in your body, in your heart tells you not to do it, listen to them and take the advice. It's the best thing you can do for yourself. And I did. And I'm not sorry. And I've never looked back.
Do you remember why I said that you needed to call the police?
Yeah, he choked me until I passed out.
Well, that, but what was going on at the time was the O.J. Simpson trial.
Oh my God, yeah.
And what I learned from watching that trial was that Nicole Brown Simpson was constantly a victim of physical abuse by O.J., and the police didn't take her seriously because she never followed through on anything she called in for. She kept retracting. And I said, what I'm learning from this trial, and I wasn't even in the divorce business at the time, but what I was learning from this trial was if there is physical abuse, it's going to get worse and worse.
Yep.
Because it escalates, because that anger that fuels the physical abuse can't go anywhere but back at the victim if the victim is in close proximity. And if you want to be taken seriously ever by anybody that you need to have help you, once you're a victim of physical abuse, you must report it. And you must stick with it. And then the police got involved, right? When you went there and said, well, we can't just take a report. We actually have to remove him from the house.
Well, that didn't happen. What happened was the police officer that I called I went to a friend's house to do this. And he came and he said, do you have any marks? And I said, no, I have no marks on my neck. And he said, well, that would have helped, but I can file a report. That's all I can do. I then called my teacher of the class, and she said, you need to go. So basically, they told me the steps to take. You need to go down to the courthouse, and you need to file a protection from abuse, which I did, which again was one of the hardest things I've ever done. It was a horrible, horrible, experience, but I did it. And when I did that, then they said to me, so you get an advocate down there. So the advocate told me, you can have him removed. And that's when I had to go to the sheriff's office and set that up. So it all, you know, it all just kind of, everything just falls into place with all your different support systems and advocates and everything that you have to go through. I had to go to the judge and beg him to give me a protection from abuse because he didn't want to do it. And I explained to him that I was terrified because I knew from everything that I had read that it would only get worse. It would never get better. So I followed suit. So I explained that to him. He then issued me the protection from abuse. And then I went to the sheriff and I scheduled a removal.
That, you know, it's so funny how time compresses your memory. Mm-hmm. And I didn't remember all of those steps. I just remembered the big steps. And mm-hmm. that was...
Oh, so many. Yeah, there were so many little tiny steps I had to take to get everything put in order. The day that I knew they were coming to take him, I had to go up to my neighbor's house and say, I need you to watch Jimmy. Please don't ask me why. Please don't let him go home until I come and pick him up. I took Mia with me to John's. It was his karate night. And so I took him to karate practice and I had Mia with me. I said, bring your homework. Don't ask me any questions. Just do it and come with me. She did. Normally she would have fought. She didn't. She just like knew. And so she came with me. While I was at John's karate practice, my phone rang and the phone rang in that. This was before cell phones. Oh my God. And the phone rang in the office. They called me down to the office. They said, your husband's on the phone. He was with the sheriff. And he said to me, why didn't you just ask me to leave? You didn't have to do this. And I said, I did ask you to leave and you wouldn't leave. So yeah, I did have to do this. And that was the end of the conversation. And then the policeman who removed him said that, you know, is he allowed to take some stuff because he's being really cooperative? Like he was more sympathetic towards my ex-husband than he was towards me. And they're not, but you know, you forgive that because he didn't know what went on. He didn't know why I was doing this.
Right.
So that was fine.
And a policeman would appreciate cooperation. I mean, they really do.
So of course I let him take stuff. And then, when that was over, when the class was over and I went up to the neighbors and I got Jimmy and I brought everybody home and we sat down in the kitchen and I told them what had happened. Not, you know, I never told them what he did to me.
Right.
I just told them that his dad was gone and everybody was fine. Nobody cried. My house was tense. It was like tension left the house finally.
Okay, so this is important for the listeners again because I get this in the office all the time. When people call to just find out information, find out what their options are in filing, the big issue is, well, we have children and I'm really on the fence. I don't know whether to do this or not. I don't know whether to just keep the house intact, the family intact until the youngest graduates, or do it now and disrupt their lives. And my question back to everybody always is, well, noble that you want to do that. That's really great that you're thinking of the kids and this. Your thoughts are this may be the best option, but what's the tone in the house? What's the environment like for the children? And what behavior are you as parents modeling for the children in a household where there may be constant argument, or if you're the people that don't argue, complete silence, no interaction, no affection, because you're modeling for your children whichever route you take.
Exactly. You are exactly right. And so, yes, that's what you consider. What is the best environment for your children? Is it a single parent home with love, or is it a two parent home with tension and distance? The most one interesting thing is when Jimmy was in second grade and they did drawings of their families. He has in his, I still have it, in his drawing, he had me, John, Mia, him, in one side of the paper, and he had his dad completely on the opposite side of the paper, lying in bed and reading a newspaper.
Wow.
Still have the picture.
Interesting. Well, and then when Jimmy was an adult, and by the way, Jimmy is her youngest, when Jimmy was an adult just a few years ago, and I was in the divorce business, I said to him, when the divorce started, do you remember as a youngster what your reaction was? And he said, I finally had peace in the house.
Mm-hmm.
That was his memory. I finally, and he loves his dad.
He does.
Let's just say that. He loves his dad. He had a relationship with his dad. And children still want to have relationships with their parents, regardless of what the marriage is like. They still want that connection with their parents.
And they should be allowed to have it.
Right.
So mothers who, you know, and it's really hard not to diss your ex. I did it. I couldn't help myself. I was so human when it came to that. But I always, always wanted them to have a relationship with their father because that was healthy for them. Even if he was a jerk, I still wanted them to be connected with their dad. And they have, and they all are. The boys more so than Mia because John was really anti-female and Mia. And he had a very tumultuous relationship all the way through. So she unfortunately has never, she doesn't remain close to her dad, but she does, you know, acknowledge him on occasions and answers him when he calls and texts her. So they do have a relationship. It's just, I'm sure it's not one that he loves, but it's better than nothing.
Well, and she worked towards it, and I watched her do that, and I was very proud of her that she did that, mm-hmm. because we're just imperfect beings, and we try our best, and sometimes our best isn't great, and sometimes our best is wonderful, and you know, that's the way it is. Okay, you had an attorney representing you. Mm-hmm. How did you research attorneys, and what were your determining factors for choosing the attorney you worked with?
My attorney was referred to me because she worked with the Displaced Women Housewives organization. So it was the organization. They recommended her to me. I called her. It was funny. I called her. We talked. She was very pro-woman. She had been through a divorce herself. And so she knew exactly what I was going through. She worked with me because she knew I didn't have a lot of money back then. So she would have me do filings that I could do to save money that way. In addition to that, she gave me discounted rate because I couldn't afford very much. She was wonderful. And so I just took every piece of advice she gave me and did exactly what she told me to do. And everything turned out fine. She's the one that told me to have his wages attached. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. That seems so mean. She said, trust me, have his wages attached so you don't have to fight over child support every month. Did it? So glad I did it. And these women who are too proud to take child support from their exes, or they'll say, okay, I won't take child support if you don't have anything to do with the kids. Shame on you. You're hurting your children. First of all, those kids deserve that. That money's not for you. That money is for the children. So you're literally denying your kids a cost of living. You are denying them that. So you shouldn't do that. And secondly, don't your pride get in the way of this? That's ridiculous. He had the kids. He needs to support them. And so, no. And they need to have a relationship with him. Let your children decide if they want to have a relationship with their dad. Don't do that. Don't say, no, I'm not going to take any money from you, but you're never going to see your children again. No, don't allow them to be lowlifes, which a lot of guys, unfortunately, will choose that route.
Well, my experience here is a little different. Mm-hmm. I'm not finding that the recipient of child support is voluntarily waiving it. I do find mm-hmm. that with spousal support, though, which is interesting. I meet a few parents every now and then where one parent really didn't want to have children. And that's kind of an issue. It was surprising to me that I have worked with a handful of couples where one parent, generally father, I don't know why, and I'm not casting aspersions against men, because I've also met some very nurturing men who are more nurturing than women. Yeah. But I have found some men say, well, I really don't want any parenting time. Can I just trade that off for no child support? And so I get what you're saying in that they're both your children. Even if you decide that later on that you shouldn't have been a parent, you are. Mm-hmm. And you have obligations. Mm-hmm. And my feeling is, and see if you've seen, your ex respond like this. My feeling is, if you contribute to your children's lives, eventually you do feel proud of yourself, or it shows that you've had some degree of accomplishment in raising them. Or do you think that's very Pollyanna of me to think like that?
No, I think that's spot on. And the problem with men who don't want to pay child support, they feel like they're handing their ex-wives money to play with. And that's not what's happening with the money. And in my own experience, my ex felt that I was partying with that money. When I was barely able to make the mortgage payments.
Believe me, I remember that.
Yeah, and my mother was buying them all their clothing because we couldn't afford that either, even with child support. So, no, I wasn't partying with the money. But I think that's what a lot of guys think. I think that's a lot of what fathers think, is that the wife is taking the money and spending it on herself when that's not even possible.
Yes, so you're right. So in California, child support pays for food, shelter, and clothing.
Here too.
Yes, everything else, which is a lot, cell phones, computers, karate class, art class, play mm-hmm. dates, birthday parties, summer camp, that's all supposed to be divided by both parents. So for our listeners, when I am talking to the payor of child support, and they're suspicious about where the money is going, I say, look, let's just break this down. How much is your wife's rent? Well, we have the financial disclosures. You can easily see what her rent is. Now, you look at how many bedrooms is in that house or that apartment. Part of that rent goes to your child's bedroom. The more time the parent who's receiving child support has the children, that goes for food. Look at what her grocery bill is on her financial statement. And then lastly, who takes the kids shopping more for clothes? It is both parents do, but typically it's mom or whoever has the children more of the time. So you can easily see person who's paying child support that they don't even have to give you a written documentation. You can see right now that what you're giving may not even cover what the expenses are for food, shelter, and clothing. And that seems to calm people down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it rarely, and that is true. It doesn't cover everything. I mean, If I didn't have the help of my mother, my kids wouldn't have played football. Mia would not have gotten voice lessons. I mean, these are extras that you want your children to have, but the child support doesn't cover. And, you know, the money that I was making wasn't going to cover it. I mean, we barely had enough to make mortgage payments and pay the utility bills, let alone clothing and everything else that they wanted to be involved in. So I was very fortunate to have family support. Not everybody has that, unfortunately, and they have to live on what the courts decide they need to live on.
I know, that's tough. Mm-hmm. Jerry, now that you've kind of given a little profile of John's personality challenges, how was his attorney to work with?
Well, first of all, the first attorney he had fired him. He's really hard to get along with. He just is. And so the attorney said, of course, the attorney was a woman and he had issues with women. So the attorney was a woman and she said, you know, she just said, you won't listen to us. You won't take our advice, blah, 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 blah. And so we're fired. You know, we can no longer work with you. So he gets this guy, Stephen Wolf, his name was. And Stephen Wolf was a friend of the guy that ran our hearing, which was not in our benefit. And so he told, but what ended up happening with Stephen Wolf is my ex refused to pay him. And so I was getting all these notices that he wasn't being paid. And I just laughed. I said, well, you know what? You did whatever you could, Mr. Wolf, to hurt my children. Now you're not getting paid for it. Oh, well.
What do you mean by that?
What?
You did what you could to hurt my children. What do you mean?
Oh, okay. So when he had his first attorney, the woman, and we went before the, what do they call them? The judicial.
They should call them judges here in California.
No, it wasn't a full judge. This was a
commissioner, a temporary judge.
Uh-uh.
All right.
I can't remember what they called him.
All right.
He was kind of like a magistrate within the judicial system.
All right.
But he worked at the courthouse. So okay. He was very, we want to do what's best interest of the children when he was with the woman. And they, you know, we want to do what's in the best interest of the children. So we're going to decide what that is. And, you know, we'll reconvene. By the time we reconvened, John was with the other attorney, the male attorney, who happened to be buddies with this guy. And all of a sudden, he didn't give a crap about what happened to the kids. You know? And even my attorney said, wow, what happened? What happened here? And so one of the things that my ex was always saying was that I cheated on him, which I didn't. I mean, who has time to cheat on you with three little kids? I don't have time for this stuff. So, but that was his narcissism. He couldn't accept the fact that I would leave him because of him. He could only accept the fact that I would leave him for other people. So he invented this story that I was cheating on him. And he told it to a lot of people. But that's neither here nor there. He also told it to the judge and the judge or his lawyer, and the lawyer told it to the judge and the judge believed his friend. So all of a sudden my kids got screwed. And by that, I only mean that they got the minimum amount.
Oh, minimum amount of child support. Okay. I get it.
Nothing else happened.
The reason why I even asked this question about what was the other attorney like is because, you know, quite often one party will choose an attorney that's good but fair and wants to keep everything fair and copacetic and low key.
Yeah.
And then the other person will hire an attorney kind of a little bit like them. That phrase, water seeks its own level, applies here. When people have personality disorders, personality changes, somehow they find very litigious attorneys who actually just feed off the energy of conflict.
Yeah.
And that's really why I asked the question, because people listening and people who come here asking for referrals say this, that, gosh, can't the judge see that the other, you know, my ex, soon-to-be ex-spouse's attorney isn't playing fair? They're just creating discord where there doesn't have to be discord. And I wanted people to understand that can happen.
It does happen. It happened in my case. This guy, all he wanted to do was win as much as he could win.
Okay. And then your attorney, who sounded pretty cool, she just said, there's nothing we can do. This is the ruling. We have to accept it.
Yep. There's nothing we can do, because he didn't really, like, he was going to be, you know, at first he was going to be a little more generous when it came to the kids, but then he just hardlined and gave them what the bottom line that they had to accept.
The minimum the law allowed.
Yeah, the minimum allowed.
All right.
And he said something to me like, well, you get what you deserve.
You know, that's okay. California is a no-fault divorce state. That would not even be brought up.
Oh, no. So is Pennsylvania.
Or it would be shot down if it was brought up.
Well, it was brought up, and I was stunned. Just stunned. That's when I knew that John had told Stephen Wolf that I had cheated on him. Stephen Wolf told the magistrate or whoever he was, and he believed him. Uh-huh. And it never happened. Never.
Okay. Therapy. You mentioned that you went to therapy. Did you put the children in therapy?
Yes, immediately.
Okay.
Immediately I put them into therapy. The therapist actually said the boys didn't need therapy, that they were fine. And then Mia's therapist saw her for a little while, but Mia was very resistant to therapy, and she said, don't force her, because then she will never seek therapy should she really need it in the future. And so I didn't. I pulled her out. And as a matter of fact, later on in life, when she really did need it, she went on her own.
All right, so this is important for everybody to know, because what parents don't realize sometimes is that the kids have a huge adjustment in a divorce. You really don't know as a parent, because you're going through your own emotion with a divorce, all your fear and all of the discord again that brings into your life for a while. It's very difficult to put yourself in your children's place, especially if you did not come from a divorced home yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting really good therapists on board is highly recommended, and making this divorce very child-centered is very important. And would the therapist of the kids explain to you what you had to do, if you had to make any changes to accommodate the children?
Absolutely. And he said, anything that you can keep the same, keep it the same. If you can keep them in the house, keep them in the house. If you can't keep them in the house, as in my case, I couldn't, keep them in the same school district. And so I listened, of course. And we talked about it. I talked about it with the kids. Do you want to move closer to your grandmother and be in a different school district? You want to stay in this? And they all wanted to stay. And so we stayed. We couldn't stay in the house, but we could stay in the school district.
Okay. All right. Very good. Jerry, what were your greatest fears in getting divorced?
Loneliness. That was my greatest fear, that I would be lonely. And that I would be unhappy. Ruining my children's lives. That was probably the number one fear, that I was ruining the lives of my children and that I was going to damage them. It turned out pretty well, though, so.
They really did.
Yeah, they turned out great. Even Mia. Well, Mia brought it up the other day with somebody. Now Mia is 37 years old.
Happily married.
She said, it was, you know, my father just was not a happy person, and we had an unhappy household, and it was much better when my mother and he split, even though we had to move houses into a much smaller house. she said it was so much, it was just the right thing to do. So she did say that. The other thing that I did a lot of reading. And one of the things I read was that children suffer when you go through a, put them through a divorce. They have a 5-year lag. And doggone if Mia didn't graduate from college 5 years later. However, she graduated summa cum laude, so I was pretty happy. But she went through a tough time before that, a very tough time. And I did what I could to help her, and but she turned out just fine.
They all did. All the kids are great. Jerry, what was it like to be a single parent emotionally and financially?
Well, I was poor. So one of the women that I knew that I was working with on a she said her husband was an attorney, and she said to me, if you are thinking of getting a divorce, you need to be prepared to be poor. I said, okay. So when it happened, I wasn't surprised. I became very poor. You helped me out because you would send me money, and that was fabulous and so necessary. My mother helped me. I had family. So, you know, between you and mom, I survived. I also was very, so I immediately got into the workforce the way I could. I couldn't go back to, I was a teacher. I couldn't go back to teaching because I just couldn't find a job teaching. And so I had to enter a brand new workforce that I never had to, was never involved in before. I had to get into the business world, which I did. And then I would just work my way up from job. I've had 11 companies because I've always needed more money, more money, more money. It was the only way I could get more money was to change companies. So eventually, after many, many, many years of being poor, I finally made it to a position in life where I make a decent amount of money. But my children watched that. And Mia has always said to me, I'm so proud of you for what you accomplished in life, being a single parent and having to get back into the workforce after 10 years of being a stay-at-home mom. And I never gave up, and I just kept plugging away, and now we're in a good place.
Yeah, I know you're doing very well now. And this is really important for those stay-at-home moms to hear this, because I know a lot of times moms say, well, it's not fair. I was a stay-at-home mom. I want to continue to stay home and raise the kids. But life isn't fair.
No.
And it happens. But what I'm hearing from you is it made you a stronger, better person ultimately.
Absolutely. Absolutely it did. And I have a sense of accomplishment because of it. And the other great thing is when you do this, when you go back to work, you start to find out things about yourself like, wow, I'm really good at this. I'm really good at, you know, I'm really good at talking to people. I'm really good at, well, I ended up being really good at immigration. Who knew? Who in a million years would have thought I would end up in an immigration position? And I am, and I love it. So you find out things about yourself, especially if you switch jobs. Because as a woman, let's face it, it's really hard, even now, for companies to promote you as a female. Unfortunately, it's not that different than it was 20 years ago. So find good companies. Find a company where, you know, your leadership is progressive and fair, and that you respect them. If you find leadership that you respect, you're going to be okay in that company.
Okay. Jerry, would you change anything about the way the divorce was handled on your end?
Absolutely not.
Okay, great to hear. And lastly, as we conclude the interview, any words of advice beyond a lot? You've given a lot of advice here. Any other words of advice to give our listeners to help them through this most difficult event?
I think the hardest decision to make is the decision to go through the divorce. You need a support system. You really need a support. I don't care if they're friends, cousins, coworkers. Seek out support. Get a therapist, a good one, that you relate to. that would be my best advice. And please educate yourself. Please find out what you need to do. Even if you decide not to get a divorce, educate yourself on how to be an independent person, because you're going to need it.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent advice. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it, and sharing your story with our listeners. And I want to thank all of you for joining us at Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. Please subscribe. You can do it automatically if you go to Podbean, and each episode will be downloaded every Wednesday for you. And please share this podcast with your friends. You can reach me at Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com. That's Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com if you want to give me show ideas, or through my website, divorceresourceinc.com. divorceresourceinc.com. Talk to you all next week, and as always, have an amicable day.